Sports Day for Kia.
The all-new Kia Sportage has been unleashed. And Toolkit Depot, the ultimate range of top-brand tools, equipment and workwear. Toolkitdepot.com.au.
Great to have your company. Welcome to Sports Day and stay with us. It is pretty hot for barbecues galore. You can shop online and in-store at barbecues galore. The range, the price, the knowledge. Now you're cooking. Our Australian cricket team have recovered after a very, very poor start. They were 3 for 12. Should have been 4 for 12. It was a drop catch from Manus Labuschagne that was dropped early in his innings. He went on to make 44 from 53 balls. Travis Head, 101, and a short time ago, Cam Green sent back to the pavilion for 74. That fifth wicket partnership between Head and Green was able to produce 121, and currently our Australian men's team are 6 for 241. Mark Reddings is with me tonight. Welcome, Skeet.
Thank you, Carl. Good evening to you. Yes, there's a bit of sport happening at the moment with the test match unfolding, and a great recovery after being 3 for 12, Australia having been inserted on what looked like a pitch that had a fair bit of grass on it. And the other story, which just won't lie down, although the fact that we know that the world number one, he is in court, not on court as we speak. So he's gone back to try and fight this deportation. The visa's been cancelled. Going back to the same judge, Carl. So there's a possibility, if the judge is still seeing the Novak Djokovic line of thought, that he might get a last-minute reprieve. But surely the Australian government has put down its foot and said eventually, after days and days of deliberating, that his time's up.
Well, for those of you that haven't heard the news, so today it was the Immigration Minister who exercised the power under Section 133C, Paragraph 3 of the Migration Act to cancel the visa, which was held by Novak Djokovic, on health and good order grounds, on the basis that it was not in the public interest to do so. Now, this was following the Federal Court and the Family Court on the 10th of January, where they quashed the visa, and that was a decision that was made to cancel, to overrule the cancellation decision on procedural fairness grounds. So that is now back in the court, and I'd be very, very interested, as you said, Skeet, it only got underway about just over 20 minutes ago at 5:45 Western Standard Time, and so we will keep you up to date as the night unfolds here on Sports Day. I just wonder what people think and how they feel now that he's had the visa cancelled. I felt that it was fair, and look, if he wanted to set an example to kids and his idols, wouldn't you just fall on your sword and go, Skeet? Martina Navratilova and a few others around the world have said he should?
Yeah, I'm not sure that's in Novak's line of thinking. He honestly believes that he should be here. He's a non-vax, vaccination type of fella. So I honestly believe that he thinks that the entitlement factor doesn't apply to him. When he stepped on that plane, he obviously thought he had done enough paperwork, or his advisors had told him, look, we'll be able to get this through. Well, they genuinely thought that they had the right of passage to come into Australia. I think the right decision has come to pass here, Carl, but what I am concerned about is our reputation internationally. I think, let's be honest, it's been a balls up from the get-go since he's landed in Australia. So whose fault it lays at, that's up for debate. But there's no question whether it's the federal government, Tennis Australia, or the Victorian government, or Novak himself, who's hoodwinked a lot of people along the way. There's a few people that certainly haven't come out of this smelling of roses.
133-882, if you would like to join in tonight. Andy Murray, the former world number one, was asked, and he said, look, it's not a good situation. I'm not going to sit here and kick Novak whilst he's down. He's reached the final of the Sydney Classic. That's a pretty good effort, given where he's come from.
Absolutely, and just going on from the Djokovic scenario, given the men's draw could certainly be, not turned upside down, but tinkered, there'd be a few players now thinking Andy Murray probably not amongst those, although he has said he'd like to play on for a few more years and get another Grand Slam. This is probably the best chance for a few players that are eyeing off an event if Novak doesn't appear, because Roger Federer probably passed his peak. Novak would have been red-hot favourite to win this event. But those, Zverev, etc., have the chance to perhaps win legitimately a Grand Slam title, and Novak Djokovic not part of it. Andy Murray, his best days are behind him, but as you say, he's performed really well over there in the lead-up tournament.
Another rain delay in the cricket ski. We had half an hour, of course, that was lost this morning. It's not likely that, unless the rain stops play for the rest of the day today, that we will finish before 11 p.m. That is Tasmanian time, so Eastern Standard Time, which is after 8 o'clock our time. Currently, with rain stopping play, Australia at 6 for 241. Travis Head making a century in the position that Usman Khawaja vacated, but Uzi and a couple of the others, Warner, who I think made his longest ball duck in Test cricket history, and Smith, who made a second ball duck, didn't fare so well early today, Skeet.
Now, that's right. Let's be fair. If you watch the first half an hour or hour of play, it was tough going for the openers, a world away from what Usman Khawaja had to contend with at the SCG. So Marcus Harris looking on. He knows how tough it is at the top.
Hang on. No, I'm saying it was tough conditions today.
You don't think it was?
Well, it was pretty tough at the MCG as well, and it was pretty tough at the SCG.
I just said Marcus Harris would have been looking on. He knows how difficult it is to open the batting. This pitch today, though, like other pitches during the series, had a lot of grass on it. The first hour was really tough. Doesn't matter whether Marcus Harris was out there, Usman Khawaja, or David Warner. What's that?
So, which is where I think that, you know, a few of the listeners that are saying that Marcus Harris was a little bit hard done by get vindicated, don't you think? Because it isn't tough at the top of the order with a brand new rock, whether it be a pink ball or a red ball, to actually do what he was able to do and to occupy the crease and to take some pressure off and to maybe allow the middle order to take advantage, which Khawaja actually did, and so too did Green and Head, mate. That 121-run partnership was unbelievable.
Yeah, it was terrific. And Travis Head, the way he went about his business, it essentially started with Manus Labuschagne realising the deck was doing a fair bit. He played some very attacking cricket. In fact, his dismissal, if you haven't seen it, Stuart Broad sort of bowled him around his legs. He fell over. It was the most ugly, awkward, bizarre dismissal, I think, in Manus Labuschagne's career. I'm not sure something will top that, but he got himself in an awful tangle and everyone was having a bit of a laugh at it about it afterwards. But he set the tone in that session, along with Travis Head, who came along and joined in the party, to really take the fight to the English bowlers. And it's paid off because Australia now, although the rain has come, in a good position to push up towards 300.
And at the PGA Championship, which is being played over there in Brisbane, Jadiah Morgan, what a stunning start. 14 under par, a second round 8 under. He had a 63 today, had a 65 yesterday. He's 10 strokes clear of Minwoo Lee, is currently in a tie for 8th place at minus 4, so he's 10 shots ahead. A great start for him. Let's go to Matt in Wembley Downs, who joins us first. 133-882 is the number. Good afternoon, evening, Matt.
Hey, Carlos. Skeet, again, lads. Great show. Always.
Thank you.
Just to kick things off, Skeet, just trying to work out where your head's at, mate, regarding Novak and with what you said. And please elaborate to help me understand. Mate, look, he has to have so many ducks in a row to be able to enter the country as everyone else does, okay? And then you're sort of commenting and saying, well, you know, it's been a balls up from the get-go. Mate, if he had his ducks in a row, there would be no intervention by any of the government departments. I'll leave you with that.
Yeah, no, look, my response is he didn't have his ducks in the row, but who told him that he was able to come to Australia? Matt's gone. Okay, well, clearly the Novak Djokovic camp believed that Tennis Australia or the Victorian government had given him the imprimatur to jump on a plane and come to Australia. Now, the federal government, after looking at the evidence since, has disputed the fact that he was given the all clear. So, no, there has been a balls up from various parties. I don't think anyone can suggest that our side of the equation, be it the federal, the Tennis Australia, or the Victorian government, have got it 100% right. Otherwise, we wouldn't be in this position right now, albeit I think most people agree that Djokovic has done the wrong thing and he probably doesn't deserve to be in Australia.
I just can't believe that if he wasn't double vaxxed in the first place, then why wasn't that clarified from the federal government's perspective to the
totally.
To the Victorian government and to Tennis Australia right from the start, and whether they couldn't get that information out of Novak Djokovic, and then the scenario under which he got into this country around getting COVID and then not being able to get vaccinated. He has no intentions of getting vaccinated. I think that's fairly clear. Let's go to Don, 133-882. Don, good evening.
Good evening, boys. Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, let me tell you, if he had picked up his bags and said, listen, I stuffed up, my apology to everyone, federal government and people of this country, I stuffed up, I'll get going and come back next year, he will have more and more respect. And let me tell you, him and Bryson DeChambeau, okay, you fellas know, you know who he is, okay,
yep.
Hulk of golf, the two most hated sports person in the world, okay? Now, just remember, this fella got disqualified last year in America. I mean, he also did over here when he lost a point and then he backhanded a tennis ball, ate his young girl in the face or whatever. I mean, he's a loser, honestly. I mean, Federer, he would never done that. Nadal would never done that. You know, they would just walked away. But anyway, that's my point. How good does the government to kicking him out? Just hope he doesn't go into tournament.
Yeah, I think the right decision was made in the end, Don. It took a long while to get there, though, Carl. I mean, unless there was some legal pushing and shoving behind the scenes, which I'm sure there was, and that's why we end up now with the court hearing taking place on a Friday night at 20 past 9 over there in Victoria. This is obviously going to be a marathon, I'm guessing, unless the judge just throws it out straight away and Novak has to jump on a plane first thing tomorrow.
Well, it shouldn't be that complicated, to be perfectly honest. But anyway, we are talking in the legal world, and things are three times as complicated as what they normally need to be. That's from what my experience is. Anyway, 133-882. You can join the conversation. If you want to talk about the cricket, you are more than welcome. Tennis, anything else that's on your mind, the golf today. We've also got some AFLW action underway. We'll update all of that and more after this.
Sports Day for Kia. The all-new Kia Sportage has been unleashed. And Toolkit Depot, the ultimate range of top-brand tools, equipment and workwear. Toolkitdepot.com.au.
So Novak Djokovic currently in the courts. He has launched an appeal that is before the court, and it is with the same judge that quashed his conviction, quashed his last visa cancellation last time. Perth Scorchers lost earlier today. Cam Bancroft and Matt Kelly this morning, Skeet, both tested positive to COVID, so both, of course, will have to sit on the sidelines for a little bit longer now, but the strikers in the end were far too good.
Yeah, had some injury concerns as well. Ashton Agar was used as the X-factor play. He's got a bit of a shoulder concern. Hopefully just a couple of days will get him right for their next match. But Laurie Evans injured his toe. He made 31 in their 9 for 127. And as it turned out, they had to use three players with the gloves in that inning. So a few injuries and the COVID all coming into play. So as soon as Mitch Marsh, Josh Inglis and Jai Richardson are available, I would have thought the Scorchers would like them back as soon as possible. If they'd won today, by the way, Carl, they would have wrapped up top spots. So where they finish now, it's certainly going to be top two, but their home games as well during the finals, they're nominating Marvel Stadium in Melbourne. So that's given they can't return to Optus, that's their preferred choice of venue.
Currently, a rain delay in the cricket. Australia is 6 for 241. Let's go to Veronica in Port Kennedy. G'day, Veronica.
Hello there. A comment on Novak Djokovic. I think the Prime Minister gave the wrong reason for excluding him from coming in. He gave the pub test that most Australians, you know, are pretty up in arms about him getting his way to come in, and a lot of others are denied. A visa is a legal matter, and that's the reason it should be judged on, whether there are anomalies, discrepancies, inconsistencies. Then if my name's on the top of it, I get denied immediately, and that's how it should have been judged.
Don't disagree,
that
Veronica.
That's the reason, given.
That's the simplistic and correct way of looking at it. I guess there's other elements of this story which either haven't come out or we are unaware of at this stage. But the basis is, if his visa wasn't given the tick by Border Force or Border Security, then that's where we've ended up. And I don't think there's anyone to blame but Novak himself and his party.
The judge originally overturned it on procedural fairness grounds, and that was because he was not given it was an unreasonable amount of time that was given to him to address the issue at the airport. I think we've moved on a fair bit from there. Let's go to Mick in North Perth. G'day, Mick.
I just was watching half an hour ago on the Foxtel, and a president of Lawyers Council of Australia, and he can't understand when Djokovic first time was released. He get a pair to put him in a quarantine till they apply, not let him to go in a community for 5 days. And about the tennis call, I just surprised how 6 PR didn't talk with Paul McNamee and the experts in the tennis. Tennis is my second sport after water polo, and I watch even challenges and everything. I was on every Open Cup call, 11 Australian Open, and I watch challenges. I know the dog's name, cat's name. He begged everybody. I couldn't believe it. Heiter of the block, and he was begging McNamee when he was 18, 17. McNamee bring him here, and I asked all the time how many times he and Serena Williams support the Hopman Cup more than anybody else, Carl.
Yeah, well,
Australian.
I'll endeavour to get him on, but we have had Roger Rashid, and we've had Craig Cabriel, and we've had Brett Phillips, we've had Todd Woodbridge on the program, we've had a lot of tennis experts. Darren Cahill has joined us as well, but that's a good point that you make, Mick, and I'll see if I can track him down and get him on the program for you, okay?
Paul McNamee and those people, you will see what they said. Carl, one more thing. You look, if Novak Djokovic lose against Playa, he go and hug him and wish him everything. When Nadal lose, he come and put his hand wide and go ran. I watched them live, all those players. I know the name of the dogs and cats and everything.
Mick, thank you for your call. Yeah, there's lots of views on Novak Djokovic, probably the most polarising figure in world sport, to be honest with you. Suzanne in Fremantle. Hi, Suzanne.
Hi, guys. Look, the thing is, there we have number one world tennis player, the whole world watching, the whole world knowing, and Judge Kelly said he wasn't given enough time. He couldn't get to his lawyer because he couldn't get to his lawyer till after 9. Hello? Hello? The biggest case at the moment, and your lawyer's not ready to talk to you till 9? I don't think so. It was another example of big fibs. Big fibs.
Yeah, I agree, Suzanne. I mean, let's be honest, forget about the time to get hold of your lawyer. He must have known at some stage, and certainly if not Novak directly, Carl, certainly his entourage, his people that are trying to ensure that he has a smooth passage into Australia, given he's not double vaccinated, that every avenue was ticked off. Now, if he has been given the all clear by Tennis Australia and the Victorian government, I'm not sure if that was the case, but that is what the federal government is maybe suggesting, then there has been mistakes made from the Djokovic camp, and they're the ones, particularly once they arrived in Australia, that have made so many mistakes and told some lies that they are now finding themselves back in court and probably being deported back to Serbia in the next 24 hours.
Mate, he doesn't care. If he really cared about his image, if he really wanted to set an example, for those that look up to him, particularly the children who admire him because he's a wonderful tennis player, then he had an easy opportunity and an easy decision to make, and that was to fall on his sword on the back of what has transpired, going into the public arena after contracting COVID, doing the interview, which he probably got paid for. We don't know. I don't know, but I'm just speculating that he probably got paid to do that interview, the one that he said that he'd put off. Why would you do it otherwise when you know you've got COVID, to actually then, for your team not to tick the right boxes. I mean, it's all, to me, a lot of deception in there. Now, whether he did it deliberately or not, I don't really care. It's got a lot of fig jam about it, and I love fig jam, but it's written all over it, to be perfectly honest. We will get to a commitment, because on the other side, we're going to have a chat to Michael Walters, who was running around, I think, earlier today with the Freo Dockers. We're going to ask him after this.
Welcome back to Sports Day, and it is nice to have Michael Walters on the program, back training down there at the Freo Dockers. Sun, welcome, mate. How are you going, buddy? All right?
I'm doing very well, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Now, another pre-season, given how many that you've been involved with now, do they get any easier?
No, they definitely don't get any easier. The weather gets you, but no, it's good to be back. Good to get some structure back into it, and it's good to be around the boys again, so it's very exciting.
As you get a little bit older, do you get looked after a little bit more? What's the coach like in that area?
No, we do get looked after, but also we're here to work, but I like to be out there. I don't like to be, every time you get looked after, you're always in the cross-train room working hard, so I like being out there with the boys, and I try and get out there as much as I can.
Michael, one of the great things of pre-season training, you get to see the draftees in action, and the likes of Jai Amos, Neil Erasmus, Matt Johnson, just to name a few. What's been the impression they've had on you, albeit you might not have had a lot to do with them just yet?
Yeah, well, those guys that you named, you know, and probably all of them have been pretty good ever since they got here. Just the way that they're willing to learn, willing to grow as players, has been exceptional. And there's no doubt, you know, it's been showing in the last couple of months throughout their training. They've been working hard. They've been, like I said, they're just willing to grow in all aspects of the game, whether it's out there on the park, but then also in with the coaches and talking to players as well to try and get up to standard with the structures and stuff. So those guys have been, you know, unbelievable this year so far.
Now, where are you expecting to play a role in season 2022?
Yeah, I think my role's going to be the same. I'm a leader down there in the forward line. I love to play in the forward line, but I'll also be moving up into the midfield at stages throughout games. But majority of it is going to be, you know, forward. But whenever the boys need a bit of a flip, there's no doubt I'll be going into the midfield at times.
Your club has probably put a little bit of pressure on you and your coaching group because they want a premiership in the next 5 years. So I suppose this is the stepping stone.
Yeah, definitely. This is definitely the stepping stone. And you know, as the club said that we want to get some premierships within the next 5 years, there's no doubt that we want to be out there. We want to be working hard. We want to get engaged in the with the coaches and learn the structures as fast as we can and get the younger players up to scratch because you know, our expectations go out there and win games. And there's no doubt that you know, I definitely want to win a premiership before I'm done. I've been here 14 years and we've been close. But it'd be good to get that feeling.
Lost count of that many Docker supporters that have asked over the last few years, when can we get a fit squad together? Injuries have crueled you. It's out of your control, I know, Michael, in so many ways. But, Son, you'd like just a slice of luck through the course of the year to give yourself a list that's operable through the whole season.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, injuries are one of those uncontrollables in footy and you can't really control them. We're out there to play games. We're out there to go hard. We're out there to essentially go into war against opposition. And injuries are going to occur. Even in training, injuries are going to be there. But as a team, we want to make sure that, like I said, you know, build everyone up, get them up to the scratch, get them up to standard with the game style and training so that, you know, when the opportunity comes to put on the purple in an actual AFL game, that they can come in and pursue their role.
Just on the game style, mate, is that going to change or are you going to be pretty much looking much the same as what we saw last season?
No, there's definitely going to be some changes. I can't really talk about the changes
on radio.
But there's definitely going to be some changes. There's going to be a more exciting brand. There's a lot of quality young players coming through who's going to give a lot for the supporters. There's no doubt about it.
Jordan Clark, tell us how he's tracking. What he's doing on the track. He's got some wheels. Is he using them?
Yeah, he's definitely got some wheels. I saw that firsthand on the track over the last couple of weeks. There's another one who's a young, thriving player who's willing to grow and willing to get better as well. He's over there at the Cats with a lot of quality players. And there's no doubt that he's also, you know, talking to the younger players as well and bringing some of that knowledge across to us to use as well. So, Jordan's gone really well. Once again, you know, he's another one that's had a few injuries that sort of, you know, steadied him along as well. But he's in full flight now and he's training very well.
Now, earlier today, you had 3 10-minute periods of match simulation as you continue your pre-season preparation. Were you involved in any of that?
Yes, I was involved. I played sport. It was good to get those 3 quarters of match sim in. You know, you can only do so much running around the oval before you get sick of it. So it's good to go out there and essentially play a game against each other and really, really just enjoy it. Really just enjoy getting around the players, but also having some competitive moments as well is encouraging.
Sean Darcy was exceptional last year, mate, and you know, he finished the season as good statistically as any other ruckman in the competition. And Lloyd Meek, he played a couple of games and he didn't look out of place. How has he progressed, and do you think that those two can play in the same team together?
Yeah, those two were, well, as you said, you know, Lloyd Meek, he played a couple of games last year, which I thought he done quite well. And there's no doubt that he's another one that's elite. He comes back in good shape. He's an absolute bull in the gym. He works hard. He works hard on his skills in the gym and out on the track. So there's no doubt that him and Sean are butting heads in games, but games that we play at training. But those two are, you know, quite willing to help each other out as well. They're a close little duo in training. So Sean tries to teach him as much as he can as well.
Sad to say, we've got a lot of clubs and teams struck down by COVID through summer sports, Sun, and you can only get the feeling that AFL teams aren't going to be immune in 2022. It's something you've got to live with, but it's not ideal.
No, it's not ideal. And we see that as an opportunity to try and get a head start. It is hard, and we don't want anyone to get sick or have COVID, but it's one of those things that we see as real... as something we can use, and because there are teams out there with, you know, 15 to 20 boys with COVID, struck down with COVID, that are training from home. So us as players, while we're here together as a group, we want to make sure that we try and get the most out of it. Because sooner or later, there's going to be, you know, players getting it, no matter if you're in Melbourne, WA or SA. As soon as the borders open, who knows what's going to happen. So we want to make sure that we really... get the most out of these moments together.
How are you placed with personnel, mate? Blokes like Sam Sturt, who we haven't seen for a little while. Darcy Tucker injured himself last season. I could go on probably because you didn't fare that well. How are a few of the big boys going? Joel Hamling, for example, is one. How are they all progressing?
Yeah. All those boys you named. Joel Hamling's going well. He's running in rehab. I was with him for a few little run-throughs today and last week as well. So he's tracking along quite well. In terms of injuries as a whole, I'm not really sure how many boys we have in rehab right now, but I can tell you there's a lot of boys out there on the park doing the match play training. So that's a good sign. So there's no doubt that our injury list is smaller. But like I said before, you know, footy is a game of, you know, it's a competitive game. Injury is going to be there, but we need to make sure that the next player comes in when it's the opportunity.
Thanks for chatting, mate. We appreciate it. And stay fit.
No worries, boys. Thanks for having me.
Michael Walters here on Sports Day. For our Dockers, how high do you think they can climb? Looking into your 2022 crystal ball.
Question is, have we got them in the top eight? I'm undecided just yet. The good news is a lot of their defenders are reasonably fit and healthy. Alex Pearce, Joel Hamling, they've got the nucleus, if they're up and running, to have their back six up and running and in good nick. Their midfield, no Adam Scherer this season, bear that in mind, so they'll need to rejig their centre square formation. And their forward line, Rory Lobb, of course, staying with the club. Michael Walters, so important to the forward line structure. Yeah, I think they're in the conversation for the top eight, but I'm not certain they're going to get there. It's going to be touch and go, I think.
Yeah, look, I think they're well and truly in the conversation. You don't have to be that good to get in the eight. You have to win 50% of your games. So I've always been a bit of a pessimist in that, you know, seventh and eighth normally don't go that far. So from my perspective, I think that they fit into that box quite nicely. I think that they could probably, sneak into sixth place, but I don't expect them to finish top four. And from my humble opinion, that's where you need to be winning the premiership. And I just don't see them finishing in the top four just yet. I think there's a couple of teams that are still a little bit ahead of them. But you never know. We could be proved wrong. For the Toolkit Depot, Top Brands Ultimate Range Pro Service, we'll clear a commitment. On the other side, we'll come back and have a chat to Kevin White from our Perth Wildcats here on Sports Day. Welcome back to Sports Day. Time now for our Perth Wildcats update for Camera Electronic, Australia's largest photographic store. And nice to have Kevy White on the program. Kev, welcome, mate. How are you going?
Yeah, doing all right. We're... you know, everyone's back on court and just looking forward to playing some games next week.
Now, just take us through catching COVID, mate, because there's a lot of people over here that are worried about it. And, you know, that's something that has been a very hot topic over the last 24, 48 hours. In fact, it's probably been 2 years, to be honest.
Yeah, so it probably a bit of a shock to us. We thought we'd last a little bit longer than about a week. to it getting into camp. We sat down as a team in Adelaide and kind of had a chat about the restrictions we were under and put a few more restrictions on what we would do in certain circumstances in terms of allowing friends and family into kind of our bubble, I guess. And from there, travelled to Cairns. Obviously, the games got cancelled in Adelaide and Brisbane, and we went to Cairns, and we're not really sure how it got into the camp, but, yeah, it kind of hit the group a bit hard and rocked the group pretty early. So it's all over and done with now. A few guys still in isolation, waiting out their seven-day period, and we've had, you know, several guys back on court, which has been unreal, and thankfully, so far so good, and everyone's recovered pretty well.
Kevin, what was the medical advice once it was established you had COVID in terms of looking after yourself to resume your season?
Yeah, so it's, you know, it hit different people different ways. I know some guys weren't really affected and other guys didn't realise they had it. Like I was, my circumstance was I was actually on court and about halfway through one of our sessions just felt like I got hit by a train. It rocked me a little bit that day and just kind of felt like the flu, really, to be honest. And, you know, you get 7 days from testing positive. I tested positive that day and 7 days recovery, just kind of laying low, as you would do if the flu hit you that hard, I guess. And from there, it's kind of easing our way back in. We've been lucky enough that they've given us a week into our first game. So that'll put 10 of us on court for next Tuesday. So, you know, just taking it easy. The last few days haven't really been anything too stressful, just shooting and casual workouts. But we kind of met with a doctor. Our doctors back in WA have been communicating with some doctors here in Tassie, and we've just kind of cruised through that process and getting back on court. Obviously, if guys have had symptoms, I think a couple guys who are meant to get out this week won't be on court with us when we go to Adelaide, which is unfortunate, but it's better to be safe than sorry and not rush these guys back into it because, you know, we've been laid up in bed and in our rooms for a week, and getting onto court, it's a process and a build-up process to get back into that, you know, match fitness.
And Kev, you've been on the road for a little while, obviously, prior to that, and you've been getting the job done, sitting up there on top of the table with 5 wins from the 6 games that you've played. So you've been doing a lot right, and as a team, you'd be pretty pleased with where you're at, but the challenge is still ahead.
Yeah, exactly. We kind of wanted to get out of that first 5 games. We thought 4-1 was probably the baseline of where we wanted to be. Pretty disappointed with losing that Brisbane game that we did, but it, you know, at 5-1, you can't really complain. And, you know, every team's had this break right now, and it's kind of like a little reset, and we've got to come out firing and get, you know, probably our, it'll be nice to get home and be, you know, 10-2, 9-3 around that mark, when we return home on February 5th.
I thought there's a huge upside given what we saw at RAC Arena, and under man had plenty of players out injured. Those respective players are starting to make their way back into the training and obviously the playing schedule. So there's a lot to like about what could happen.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's probably the beauty of the roster is what, you know, Danny bringing in Danny Mills and Scott, Mike Kelly. And then you've also got Luke Brennan, who's been here for a while. You know, the coaching staff have done an unbelievable job of putting together a roster that's well balanced, and I think, you know, with even with the pieces out that we've had, Mitch Norton possible was my pick for defensive player of the year last year, and to add him back into the mix, and then Todd Blanchfield's missed games here and there, and also Hodgie Fraser's started to find his feet and work his way into some game shape. So it's been kind of nice to have this kind of little break, and kind of hit a refresh, but at the same time, we want to play some games and continuing to work on the structures on the floor.
What has Scott Morrison been like, mate? Obviously, he was shut up in quarantine when he arrived here in Perth, here in Western Australia, and the assistant coaches had taken the reins to help, you know, just build up that initial part of the season. But just looking at him on the sidelines, he looks pretty composed from just looking in from the outside.
Yeah, he's been unreal for this group. I think, you know, Trev was unreal last year for us, in circumstances in terms of being on the road with COVID, and Scott went through it all as well in the NBA bubbles and the NBA hubs that they had. So he's been through it before, and he's kind of been a bit of a shining light for us in terms of his perspective on things and just the way he's carried himself through it. It's been awesome for the group. You know, we get into video sessions and he knows when the mood is a bit down and he'll make things a bit lighthearted and, you know, and even at training when we're missing guys or something like that, and you know, different guys are out for different reasons, he's been unreal in terms of being able to adapt and make things work for whatever circumstances have come our way. And that's probably the challenge this year, is the team that comes out of these circumstances and different situations the best and adapts to those things is probably going to, you know, put themselves in a good position to win the championship. And Scott's doing an unbelievable job of holding everyone accountable to that.
Thanks for having a chat, mate, and all the best for Tuesday. Take care.
Appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
Welcome back to Sports Day, and we're going back-to-back with the West Coast Eagles and the Freo Dockers. And the Freo Dockers go first because winners are grinners, and it was a good start down there at Freo Oval on the weekend. And Laura Pugh joins us for our AFLW preview. Laura, welcome. How are you going?
I'm going very good, thank you.
Nice way to start, and a really good crowd too. It was great to tune in and see so many people down there enjoying themselves in what is a really nice environment.
Yeah, I think it was a great atmosphere, and you could hear the crowd cheering the whole time. But yeah, it was great down here in Freo last week.
Just watching the Dockers in round one, Laura, it took a little while to get your mojo, but the longer the game went, the more you looked like the team that really pressed towards that prelim final a couple of seasons ago.
Yeah, definitely. I think we took, I guess, with the first game, just a little bit of time to warm up, but definitely settled into it. And, yeah, we're looking forward to this week again to just go that next level.
Just going, now you travel tomorrow. Can you talk us through the process of some time on the road over there in Victoria?
Yeah, so we head off tomorrow and then we have 2 weeks in Melbourne, three games, and then a week in Tassie and one game there. And then, yeah, head back to Perth after that.
Yeah. What are the expectations? I mean, obviously, it's difficult because the restrictions are going to be there. What's the message been from Trent Cooper about how you attack this challenge?
Yeah, I think the messaging has been, I guess with COVID and everything that's going on, that this is kind of another opponent, and we do just need to take this challenge on board. And I guess there will be lots of guidelines that we need to follow when we are there, but we've been well introduced to all that, and looking forward to just getting over there and settling in.
Now, that Ebony Antonio goal wasn't bad, was it, from near the boundary? Pretty good goal.
Yeah, that was pretty good. She has talked about it all week, which is fair enough, but it was really good.
You know the one that I reckon was probably better because of the distance travelled, and I reckon it's travelled well over 50, and she's at least struck it from 48, 49, is the long bomb from Gabby O'Sullivan. I mean, that was an absolute ripper. I know she had some breeze behind her, but I tell you what, it was a beautiful kick.
Yeah, no, that was a brilliant kick, and you could see how much effort she put into it with a bit of cramping after it, but that was, also amazing.
I know you only train with her and play on the same side as Kiara Bowers, but can you tell us what it's like out there either being tackled by her at training or witnessing it at close quarters?
Oh, she is just an absolute machine, and sometimes, when I have to be on the other team against her, you just know that you're going to be running about 10Ks a session. But she just goes about it so well, and she's always so humble at training, and she's making everyone better, which is great.
Any noticeable change in your game style? We've only just seen the one match and a 28-point win against the Eagles, who are still an emerging team, but have you noticed, or has there been any instructions to just tinker with your style a fraction from last season?
Yeah, I think this season will probably just look to be a bit more flexible, as you see, like, with a few changes in where people are playing, which, yeah, we're all kind of up for a different challenge, and, yeah, I think that's what will get us through this season really well.
Laura, you've got jobs, you girls, outside of the game. It's only obviously a short season, and I'm assuming that, you know, given the amount of training that you actually do in and around that, some would have work. How is all that worked out between, you know, the Fremantle Dockers and your employers outside of the game?
Yeah, I think personally, it seems quite across the board. We've had really supportive employees that. Especially with going into this hub, they've been really great and responsive to our situation. So that just makes it all so much easier when these things occur and we're having to go to Melbourne.
You talked about having some flexibility in your team. Now, by and large, Laura, you're a defender, rebounding defender. Is that the one word for you? Is that where you're happy to stay camped inside defence of 50 or thereabouts?
Yeah, I do love playing back, but if they sneak me forward, that's all. You know, I'll be very happy with that as well. But I'm back for now, definitely.
And you've been in the game for a little while, and coming from West Perth and having the couple of seasons that you've got under your belt in the AFLW, do you think, I mean, you must have seen it improve. It's been, you know, exponentially better year on year from where I sit anyway.
Yeah, definitely. It's amazing to see how much it's improved. I think even we're getting a lot of, you know, girls who are 18, 19 coming through and they're ready to play. And I think that's, yeah, where it's just absolutely improved. People ready to play that first game.
Going across to Victoria, I know there's some clubs already hit by COVID and games are being moved left, right and centre. That's, I guess, something that's going to come with the territory for the next month potentially.
Yeah, definitely. I think you've seen a lot of teams have to go deep into their squad and even with their train-ons, and I think a benefit for us is that we do have a really strong and fit squad ready to go this year. So, yeah, we'll be able to be ready for that if that does occur.
Terrific. Well, thank you very much for having a yak to us. Enjoy the trip as much as you can. Stay safe and stay healthy, and we'll see you on the field.
Thanks so much for having me.
Now, we kicked off this hour with back-to-back interviews with our girls who are competing in the AFLW this weekend. We've already had a chat to Freo Dockers' Laura Pugh, and we are joined by Paris Laurie from the West Coast Eagles. Welcome, Paris. Nice to chat.
Thanks for having me.
What was your thoughts after the weekend's action against the Freo Dockers? They got you in the end.
They did, yeah. Disappointing for us. They played really well, and unfortunately, we definitely didn't play our best footy, it resulted in a loss for us, which is, yeah, disappointing, but I guess motivating for the rest of the season for us and a bit of a wake-up call.
Given your status as an original Fremantle Docker going back to 2019, 8 games with them, moving across to the West Coast Eagles, was there any chat between your former teammates, or how did that pan out?
Yeah, I've got a pretty good relationship with a lot of the girls still, so a lot of friendly banter, nothing nasty or anything like that, but good to see a few of my mates, and good to see the likes of Anne McMahon out playing after her injuries and things like that, but yeah, I was all right. I didn't get bullied out there or anything.
You're right, Anne McMahon. Great story, great comeback story. But for your own story, coming through Claremont and joining the West Coast Eagles via Fremantle, there are different stages of development, I think it's fair to say. West Coast, with a bit of work to do to get to the level Fremantle is at?
Yeah, absolutely. I think each season we're looking to sort of have a different impact on the competition, but this year we definitely want to be competitive, and we were definitely disappointed with our efforts on the weekend, and hoping to fix quite a few things in the upcoming rounds.
Your skipper looked like, and you've been in this role, you're part of the leadership group, she looked pretty feisty on the weekend too. She was throwing her weight around a little bit, wasn't she?
Yeah, she does get a bit of fire in her belly. Especially in a derby, there's that downtown rivalry. But, yeah, she definitely gets a little bit fiery, Swanee, but that's what we love about her.
Paris, given the West Coast Eagles and how they fared last season and your time now at the club and seeing the new players come into the group and a new coach come along, how do you think you're tracking?
Yeah, I think obviously the game just been really didn't show the improvement and how good the new list is and how good Mickey Pryor is for us as well, which is disappointing, but I'm sure you'll see it throughout the season and hopefully in this next round against Gold Coast. But yeah, Mickey Pryor's been fantastic and we've picked up some really special young players and a few girls from other teams as well. So I think this is probably the first year where we've really got our list right. So hopefully it can all come together and we can put it together nicely to perform really well on Sunday.
Speaking to Paris Laurie from the West Coast Eagles AFLW side. Paris, you've done a fair bit of ruck work during your career thus far. Listed as 178 centimetres or 5'10" in the old language, does that mean you concede some height in those ruck contests or is that about the par for AFLW?
No, definitely undersized ruck has been my nickname for the last 4 years. Lauren Bella this weekend, I think, has got at least 10 centimetres on me. So definitely have to get a little bit strategic and bring a bit of variety to the ruck. But, yeah, I guess I'm used to it after coming into my fourth year of it now. But, yeah, definitely an undersized ruck.
Well, you had more overall than Strom and Ty. Ty had 19 hit-outs, Strom had 16, and you had 25 in the end. So I suppose you'll say they got you together, but individually you had more.
Yeah, exactly. I slipped the stats man a 50 before the game, so that was perfect.
And just with your own game, what are the areas that you've been focusing on to try and get better?
Yeah, I think being undersized, obviously body work's super important, but I also know that there's going to be girls coming through that are going to have a lot more height than I do. So I guess adding a couple more, tools to the toolbox, but trying to get a little bit more forward line craft and then also just my contested work as well so I can compete in the air and on ground level as well. But yeah, I guess use what I've got to my advantage, so hoping that the taller rucks maybe can't cover the ground as well, so fitness is definitely key as well.
Absolutely, getting around the ground and being used in transition, it was something that has always been that extra key factor to your game. Now, GWS Giants roll the Gold Coast. They are your next opponents that you have at Victoria's University Witten Oval, and it's going to be a 9:40 a.m. start our time, although hopefully when you acclimatise, when you get on the kite with the Freo Dockers and head across, I believe, tomorrow?
Yeah, that's correct.
All right. And, it's that's going to be a lunchtime start, three-hour time difference, but it's going to be like kicking the dew off the grass.
Exactly, yeah. I don't mind it. I think I get a bit tired towards the afternoon, so I'm happy for an earlier start.
Maybe a nap in the afternoon for you after that, Paris.
Exactly.
Hey, just quickly, we talked about regularly about AFLW players, and particularly from the West and the work commitments required. I read that Emma Swanson, your captain, has taken the best part of 4 or 5 weeks annual leave from her firefighting duties. Has it affected you in any way?
Oh, yeah, a few of the girls have really had to put jobs on hold and take leave and things like that. Fortunately for me, I stepped away from teaching halfway through last year in hopes to sort of put my focus into footy and in case we went into hubs and things like that. So I'm actually all right heading into the hub, which is, it takes a lot of pressure off, which is nice, and I can enjoy the time over there. So, yeah, I'm good to go.
Okay, and I did ask this to Michelle Cowan. We've asked Michael Pryor in terms of the expectations for this year. Obviously, improvement is the buzzword at the West Coast Eagles, but being a competitive beast like yourself, you're out to try and win every game and certainly create some havoc for those teams that think you might be more cellar dwellers in 2022.
Yeah, absolutely. We definitely want to be competitive, and I think that's why you see, the fly in the belly of Swanee when we aren't playing well or we're not, getting the win our way sort of thing. So I think there's quite a few of us that are really competing hard and want to see wins on the board. But, yeah, it's definitely, I get it, it's about improvement as well, and we still are a new up-and-coming team. But we definitely want to put our foot down and really start to make an impact on the competition.
Good luck, safe journey, stay healthy. I think that's going to be one of the biggest challenges for you and the rest of the team. We wish you well in that area and we'll see you when you get back to Perth.
Perfect. Thanks for having me.
Great to have your company here on this Friday night, and it's time to have a chat to Scott Goodman from Athletics Australia, the Director of Performance of Coaching. Scotty, welcome, a new role that you're taking on. How are you?
Really good. It's Friday night here and we're about 5 hours time difference. So I've actually just come out of a farewell function. So, yeah, I've been in a good space.
Well, yeah. Good that you've not had too many. You can still talk to us. That's the most important part, mate. Now, look, with the role that you've taken on, can you just give us an idea of what it involves?
Yeah, well, one of the primary parts is liaising with the coaches that are employed by Athletics Australia and also ones employed by institutes and academies around the country, so WACE in Western Australia. But primarily the job is focusing on the athletes and coaches that are like on the borderline of top eight, possibility of being on the podium in Paris. So it's really looking at the top end of the athletes that make the Australian team. So that's pretty interesting for me and sort of fits with what I've been doing here in New Zealand. Yeah.
About to ask you that, Scott. A lot of similarities between the job you're currently holding in New Zealand to what you're going to do in Australia. It must make you feel comfortable going from a similar situation.
Yeah. Well, New Zealand, the Olympic Committee have a philosophy of capable of top 16, and it's a little bit different to Australia, where they're probably more include anyone that's sort of qualifies within reason. I mean, you still got to be so over here, it's a little bit more elitist, and that leads to lots of conversations over here whether that's the right thing or wrong thing, but it means that the time and energy and resource goes into the athletes that are really able to perform at the major championships. So, like I said, Paris is the main thing on the radar now, and the next, it's only 2.5 years away. So, yeah.
Exactly. Well, Tokyo's just come and gone. We've got the Commonwealth Games in Birmingham, World Athletics Championships. It's all happening in a hurry now.
Yeah, World Indoors in Serbia in March, if Australians are allowed into Serbia, depending on what's going on with Mr. Djokovic. So look, we should have some athletes going there. I'm not across it yet. So Western Australia, as you guys have probably got a really strong pole vault program. So probably a couple of guys going from WA to Serbia for World Indoors in March. And then, we've got World Champs and they are only a week apart and then straight into Comm Games. Yeah.
Well, off the back of Tokyo, you've got a chance to have a look at the Australian setup. How are we placed in the areas you're coming into?
You know, Australia's in a really interesting place. So they picked up 3 medals, but a number of athletes sort of in the top 12 or so, a lot of fourth places. Former West Australian Peter Bowl finished fourth in the 800. So, Curtis Marshall made the final, so another Western Australian guy. So there's, I think, real potential for Australia to hopefully get up to 6 or 7 medals in Paris. And, that's what sort of makes me interested in this role. I was trying to focus on probably 15 or 20 athletes that you think can get close to the podium by Paris in 2.5 years' time.
We had a chat last night to a bloke by the name of Ben Higson, who is coming across to head up our swimming program at WACE over here in Western Australia. He's a Scotsman who's currently working in Ireland. Do you know much about him, or did you have a bit of a finger in the pie here?
No, I don't know anything about him. But that's not a connection for me. I'm formerly a Tasmanian, so that's a long time ago now. Yeah.
So when do you get your chance to say get back here and take up arms, so to speak?
Heading back tomorrow week into Melbourne, and that's a bit scary at the moment because we're basically COVID free here in New Zealand, but that won't last. And heading into Melbourne, and I'll start in the first week of February, but I'll be catching up people that last week of January. So pretty much, only a week or two away.
What sort of satisfaction do you get, Scott, from working with younger coaches coming through the ranks?
I think that's the biggest thing I enjoy is working with athlete coach and the family support networks and seeing young people achieve something special at those major championships is Yeah, I'm just sitting with a couple of people at the moment, and their family, their daughter had won an Olympic medal in Rio. So yeah, when you can be involved with people that achieve at that level, it's just, you know, you can't really explain the feeling that gets out of that. And so for someone in my sort of role, which is semi-bureaucratic and semi-hands-on, it's just extraordinary to be able to help someone to achieve something that changes their lives. So, that's what motivates me to get involved with this sort of stuff. Yeah.
But it's been more than a decade since you've worked in Australia. It's, I guess, a homecoming of sorts. And how was the news taken by New Zealand? Although we're brothers in arms to some respect, there's a great rivalry between the two nations.
Yeah, well, there is. And I've had lots of nice messages from people here in New Zealand. And I think it's often in sport, when you leave a role like this, you're leaving with people pushing out the door. So I'm pretty lucky that I don't feel like that's the case for me. I would have welcomed to stay here, but there's a lot of family reasons. My dad still lives down in Tassie and my kids are in Australia, and I've just decided after the last couple of years with COVID, I want to try and get back and be closer to family. And this job's available, and it's a really interesting job to be able to get involved with. So I'm fortunate to be able to head back. So yeah, I've had a lot of people here in New Zealand that are disappointed that I'm leaving, and in a way I am as well. But another part of me is looking forward to getting back into Australia and working with it's the Australian athletes and team members and coaches. It'll be good.
Scott, great to chat. Good luck and welcome home, mate. Take care.
Okay, thank you for your time.
Good on you. Thanks, Scott. Guys. Scott Goodman there, having a few quiet ones on a Friday night, as you should, in the role of Director of Performance Coaching for Athletics Australia. That was made a couple of days ago. Nice to have him on the program here on your Friday night. We'll clear a commitment on the other side. Gavin Migro is going to join us. There's a fair bit of news in and around sport and how Speedway will be affected. We'll have a chat to Gavin next here on Sports Day. Welcome back to Sports Day, and a place that I'll be tomorrow night is down at the Perth Motorplex. Looking forward to that, but we find a man who is the Speedway Racing Manager, Gavin Migro, down there tonight. There is some action unfolding down there tonight, and just wanted to bring everyone who will be charging down there on Saturday for the grand final of Speed Week to get all of the information, just to make sure that you rock up with all the right gear. Gav, good evening to you, mate. How are you?
Good afternoon, guys. Beautiful day down here, nice and cool. There's a nice sea breezes in, so we're really looking forward to a great night of racing for Shannon's Fast Friday, which incorporates the late model nationals night one. So we've got some qualifying and some heats for the awesome late models tonight. So it should be a ripper.
Now, mate, for those that are planning to come down tomorrow on the big night tomorrow to end Speed Week, what do they have to do? What are they going to be confronted with to actually get into the joint?
So basically, as per the government regulations, they have to have the appropriate certificate, so to say that they're double vaxxed. And photo ID. So a pretty easy system. If you've been double vaxxed, you should have either the online one via your the new Service WA app, which is on that, or in your wallet, and then or the hard copy of the certificate, which is the Commonwealth Government one. And if you've got that with photo ID, we're all good to go. So so it should be relatively easy for people that are appropriately vaccinated.
Let's jump onto the track, Gav. The Sprint Car Speed Week final. Lots of hype about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Like Callum Williamson from Geraldton is in the box seat. He's leading the championship with one round to go. And the cool thing about it, Callum's just become a father for the first time with his wife and Shani and himself. Gave birth to a beautiful baby girl on Monday. So he raced on Saturday night, and then Monday they had their bub. So Marley, her name is. So it's really wonderful for him. So he'll be looking to celebrate in more ways than one.
Jason Kendrick, though, won down at Ellenbrook. He has been very, very good there at the Perth Motorplex too, so certainly cannot discount him winning the title.
Absolutely. Jason was running in about fourth spot during the early part of the race, and then had a real uncharacteristic sort of, I guess I'll probably use the word brain fade, where he had a bit of a spin and come to a stop and had to go to the rear of the field. And I thought, gee, you know, I could see his pit crew demeanour change very, very quickly. They weren't very happy. And Jason basically plugged his way back through and with two laps to go, hit the front. So amazing drive from the rear of the field back to the front to win the race. So they've really got some confidence growing. So Daniel Harding was probably a little unlucky, used up all his tyres and leading the way. Daniel will certainly be a tough nut to crack as well. So, yeah, we've got about an 80-plus car field for tomorrow night with sprint cars, the late models, production sedans as well, which is really cool for them to have a skid, wingless sprints, and the last round of the Esslinger Triple Crown for speed cars.
Gab,
should be a good one.
Talk us through the late model action and what fans, even first-timers, can expect when they rock up and have a look at that.
So tonight they've got qualifying. They'll do some like a hot lap and then a qualifying, like a time trial like the sprint cars do. Then they'll run a pair of heats and then they'll run two feature races. So each individual, so if you're on evens on the points, you'll go in one feature. If you're odd on the points, you'll go in the other feature race. Then that qualifies them for their next heat race tomorrow night. And then they'll run that heat race and then they'll accumulate all the points that they've amassed over the two nights. And then that'll be their starting positions for the all-important 30-lap feature race. So, and then that'll be the winner will be the Nationals champion. So it's pretty cool for something that we've created several years ago. And unfortunately, the international borders being restricted and all but closed, we haven't been able to get any interstate or international competitors, but we want to keep the race going. So it's been a good one, and it's their biggest race on their calendar.
So for Speedweek Grand Final and the Late Model Nationals, where there's going to be a 30-lap feature race for both events on Saturday night, how is the best way to get a ticket?
Best way to go, motorplex.com.au. There's a couple of little tick boxes there that'll actually ask you if you're double vax. You just tick that box as well. You can print your tickets at home, come in, and then enjoy a beautiful night. We've pre-sold a couple of thousand tickets already for tomorrow night, so we're really looking forward to an excellent night. So we're hoping around the 4,000 or 5,000 mark. So hopefully we get that. It should be a ripper night.
All right. And what time does the action get underway?
So the engine starts and qualifying is about 5 o'clock and then for sprint cars, and then the main show gets underway about 5:45, 6 o'clock. So that's when the anthems gets underway. So it should be a beauty night.
Thanks for your time tonight.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate your support.
Gavin Migro from the Perth Motorplex Speedway Racing Manager. So if you haven't worked out how to navigate, just for those of you that might be listening in tonight, because I have already done the Service WA app, which has got my go-to-go pass on there. It's got my most recent trip to the Northern Territory, which has got the expired pass on it. I'm just showing you there, Skeet, with my name on it. I was able to put my certificate in there, and it all gets connected between that and your MyGov ID. Now, in your MyGov ID, you need to put a driver's license and other forms of identification. And once they're linked, then you will be able to basically have your Service WA app up and running. And then there's no requirement to actually show your COVID certificate and a driver's license. All you need to do is show your certificate, which will be granted to you in the Service WA app. Takes about 20 minutes to fill it out, Skeet.
If you are tech savvy, which I'm not, so it might be a little bit longer for those of us that need a bit of help from maybe their daughters or their, yeah, a little bit of help.
Would you like some help?
I might need some.
Right, okay. Maybe I'll help you. And we need to get it done now, Skeet, so you can get in there tomorrow night. We'll come back after a short break and have a chat to Brendan Tyrrell, and it's going to be nice to have a yak to him. Of course, we've got Country Week about to get underway. All the seniors are going to converge on town. We've just had Junior Country Week this week, and the girls not too far away from assembling up there in Geraldton. We'll have a chat to Brenda next here on Sports Day. Welcome back to Sports Day. Junior Country Week has been on this week here in the city, something that I got a chance to play back a long time ago when I was out in Shackleton, Mark Reddings, prior to making my way down to boarding school when I was a young bloke, and having a kick as well when we were playing footy in the West Perth colours back at the West Perth Footy Club. And it's nice to have a bloke who has been playing in the senior Country Week scene for a long, long time. His name is Brendan Tyrrell. He is from the Esperance Cricket Association. He joins us here on Sports Day. Welcome, Brendan. Nice to chat, mate.
Yeah, thanks, Carl. Mark, you're awesome. A bit of a buyout to have me on the air. But anyway, I know we'll have a chat and, have a bit of a laugh.
Well, mate, the reason why we got you on the chat, on the radio, is because we are someone who's got a little bit of character with a bit of history in the caper. And I believe, mate, that you started playing Country Week when you were 18. How long ago was that?
Well, probably my first year of senior country week was 1995. But like yourself, I actually did play a couple of years of junior country week back in sort of probably about 90, 91, 92 as well. So I've played a couple of years of junior country week for Esperance too. So yeah, and I started my seniors back in 95.
So Brendan, let me just cut straight to the chase. Country week, how much percentage is cricket and how much is socialising?
Well, probably if you go back over my 20-odd years, I reckon the first 10 or 12 years was probably about 80% socialising, 20% cricket. But now I'm a bit older and a bit smarter, and I know what the weather's got in store for us this week. So I'll be looking after myself. Don't you worry about that.
Okay, Brendan, for the listeners and ourselves, what do you bring to the table? Batter, bowler, all rounder? Tell us.
Oh no, definitely a batter. We're lucky we've got three teams coming up from Esperance this year. So we've got a team in the A section, which is really good. We got won the B section last year, so obviously got promoted. I think it's the first time in 8 years we've been in the top tier, and then we've also got an E and an F section. So I'm in the middle tier. So I'll be batting top order in the E section team.
When you say top order, how high up in the top order? We saw Travis Head make a century for Australia again today after coming back into the middle order, which was vacated by Usman Khawaja. Had just come off the back of a double century, and he didn't make very many today.
No. To be honest, I've sort of ebbed and flowed a bit over the years, but probably my best spot is actually opening the batting. I'm not a guy that's going to go out there and smack a four or a six or a second or first ball. I like to get myself in a bit. So no, definitely open the batting and give myself sort of 15 or 20 balls to get mine, and then we'll see how it goes after that.
Is there much rivalry between different parts of Country Week with town v town? Can you tell us who Esperance might have as their rival of some significance?
Well, I could be really controversial here and say Peel, and no. If you're talking country, everyone reckons that Peel isn't country and they shouldn't be in it. So I could be really controversial because that was actually who our B section guys have been promoted to A's. That's who they beat in the final last year. So I could be controversial, but obviously up the road a bit, Ace and Goldfields, that's always a pretty good tussle. And I think the Bunbury guys, they're always pretty competitive, and you always like to either give them a good run for their money or if you're lucky enough to get the chocolates on the day.
You're probably right, given that Perth and Peel have now been branched in one group and you've got Peel Thunder engaged in the West Australian Football League, and there's a lot of the city competition involves teams from, I think, Peel and Rockingham these days, don't they? So, yeah, you've probably got a little bit of a point there, Brendan. But when it comes to the hardest to beat, who is shaping as the hardest to beat in your group, which is obviously going to be that E division this year?
Obviously, like last year, it's the same. I played in that grade last year. So the team that won on Green Rose, they got promoted. So, I think there's a Peel 4 team in there. You've really got no idea who they're going to rock up with. Obviously, they've got a massive drafting area, so they could have anyone. They could have three guys that are 50 years old who used to play Country 11. You wouldn't know who they're going to rock up with, but that'll definitely be tough. I think a lot of the sides that are in that are all like my side, Esperance 2. I think there's a Warren Blackwood 2, a Wild Catchem 2, and a great Southern 2. So they're all second teams. You just really don't know who they're going to rock up with at all. So.
Now, mate, being a bloke that lives down and breathes Esperance, where she can be pretty cool, mate, probably at this time of the year it's one of the best places to go because you can actually escape the heat. Have you seen the forecast, mate? Tuesday's 40. It's 41 on Wednesday and 38 on Thursday. How are you going to cope with that?
Well, I personally, myself, I won't be too bad. I'm a farmer, so the last 3 days up the farm, down in Esperance here have been 37, 38. So I think I'm just acclimatising myself to it, to be honest. So.
And how's the season been, mate? From all reports, it's been pretty damn good.
Oh, no, no, no. Most people up here down this area had a cracking season as far as the cropping goes. There's probably the odd areas with the Mr. Frost, which comes through, but that's just a cropping thing for you. But I think it was a bumpy year down here, and I think it was pretty much records the whole state.
If there's always something though that spoils the party, isn't it? You know, it's either a flood or it's a drought or it's a frost, or there's always something just to test you out there on the land, isn't there?
Oh, well, I suppose they've got to get you back there next year and try and better the one that you've just had. So whether you've had an absolute cracker or if you have a shocker, as long as you don't have too many shockers in a row, you'll always come back and have another go.
Question, Brendan, given that this is your 27th country week, any idea how many more you've got up your sleeve?
I was actually thinking about that yesterday when I had a phone call from the lady from the Wacker, and I thought, well, I've got there's one guy who's played more than me in town. I'll give him a plug, Shane Tobin. He sort of played last year. He's not going this year, but he's probably around the 33 mark. And also, whether it's a bit of a carrot or not, I've got my young fellow's 9 years old, and probably wouldn't play seniors until he's 14 or 15. So maybe another 5 or 6 years, and it'd be really good to play a year of country week with him in one of the lower grades.
No, it'd be terrific, mate. Well, thank you for having a chat. Love your spirit, mate, and good luck in the competition as it gets underway next week.
No worries. If I make 100, I'll give you a call.
Yeah, make sure you do, and make sure you haven't been drinking, all right?
I'll try to make sure that doesn't happen.
No promises.
Good on you, mate. Brendan Tyrrell here on Sports Day. Great character from Esperance and his 27th country week. And back in A grade after 8 years, he's not playing, as he said, in the team that is at the top. But great to have all of the country boys in town this week.
And they love it, don't they? They just get amongst each other and socialise and obviously play cricket, which they love. And yeah, it's a fantastic time of the year. Going to be a bit warm, I have to say, during the course of the week, as you mentioned. But someone like Brennan, he gets great enjoyment out of the sport he loves.